Good morning. Our text for this morning is an Easter text. It's tagged on to John's account right after all of the common elements of running to the tomb and finding Jesus in the house. And it asks us to think about what comes next. This is John, chapter 21, verses 1 through 19. After these things, Jesus showed himself again to the disciples by the Sea of Tiberias. And he showed himself in this way. Gathered there together was Simon Peter, Thomas called the twin, Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two of the other disciples. Simon Peter said to them, "I am going fishing." They said to him, "We'll go with you." They went out and got in the boat, but that night they caught nothing. Just after daybreak, Jesus stood on the beach, but the disciples did not know it was Jesus. Jesus said to them, "Children, you have no fish, have you?" They answered, "No." He said to them, "Cast your net on the right side of the boat, and you'll find some." So they cast it. And now they were not able to haul it in because of so many fish. And the disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, "It is the Lord." When Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on some clothes, for he was naked, and he jumped into the sea. But the other disciples came in the boat, dragging the nets full of fish, for they were not far out from land, only about 100 yards off. When they had come on shore, they saw a charcoal fire there with fish on it and bread. Jesus said to them, "Bring some of the fish that you have just caught." So Simon Peter went aboard and hauled another ashore full of large fish, 153 of them, and though there were so many, the net did not break. Jesus said to them, "Come and have breakfast." Now none of the disciples dared to ask him, "Who are you?" because they knew it was the Lord. Jesus came and took the bread and gave it to them and did the same with the fish. This is now the third time that Jesus appeared to the disciples after he was raised from the dead. When they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" He said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Feed my lambs." A second time he said to him, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" And he said, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Tend my sheep." And he said to him a third time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Peter felt hurt because he said to him the third time, "Do you love me?" And he said to him, "Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you." And Jesus said, "Feed my sheep." I wonder when the last time was when you considered your calling. I'm supposing it's probably been a while, if you've thought about it at all. Because a calling, for the most part, is something that we reserve for people in specialized areas. Sure, a pastor might have a calling or something like that, but everyday Christians, yeah, you're just part of the flock and you show up. It's not to do in the name of Christ. Attend church, how about where and when we can, and try to get to know our neighbors by way of presenting the love and faith of Christ. But a calling, that's big and bold and something a little bit extraordinary. Even as Mennonites, with our dedication to faith that bears ethical consequences in real life decisions, we are perhaps in real life ways a bit more than the average. We're not all that given to saying, well, this is what I'm called to. This is where I am. And this is how I am. It's even language that I'd struggled with for a long time, personally, in contemplating ministry. I knew that I enjoyed pastoral ministry. I knew that it spoke to me on many levels, but am I called? Is this what I could do? So help me God, spare no other. I didn't really know. And for the longest time, I thought, well, probably not. Until it just wouldn't leave me alone and said, okay, sure. And now that I do and have been in this line, I say without reservation, this is a calling. And it's a calling that I bear and for which I am eternally grateful, however it works itself out. And even if I were at some point to leave the formal ministry day to day, I know that I'm still called the pastor, even if it is my co-workers on the factory floor. And that's okay. I think we each have this calling. We may not call it this way, we may not understand it in these terms, but our calling is there. For we have been called and invited and offered the opportunity to take up that which is ours. I'll get back to this a little bit later. One of the things I love about the Gospels and about the Bible in general is that it gives you the characters of the story as they are. Warts and all, and frankly, the stuff that gets written down is most often not their finest moment. There are a bunch of fairly ordinary people that happen to live in an extraordinary context, and we're privileged to hear them time to again come up and be the humans that we know that they are and that we know that we are. Given to all of our failings and all of our feelings and all the ways. There's no super saints here, just people trying to make it through another day after moments that they're just trying to make sense of. And that's definitely what's going on in this story here. They just lived through probably the most momentous realities that they could ever imagine. In an unbelievable and broken week of their lives. And the disciples were just trying to catch their breath after the triumphal entry and then the passion, the crucifixion, and then the resurrection. And it's even been days of this for quite some time, and now they have to get on and say, now what? And they do what they know best. Now what? Go fishing. Let's go fishing. What's better than a little night fishing to take your mind off of what ails you? Show that you're just encountered the risen Lord and come from the grave of desperation. And they're able to actually touch their hands and the feet of the rabbi. But they still had to figure out, well, what does this all mean? And where does it all take us? And they're still trying to integrate it into their lives. So going back to what they knew made sense. And fishing was the right thing to do, if only just because it gave them the space just to be. And beyond that, whatever happens on the boat stays on the boat. It's into this intimacy that Jesus comes and finds them. He comes to them in the midst of their wonderment and meets them where they are and as they are. A morning visitor on the beach with some tactical fishing advice. Someone that they perhaps humor to cast on the other side of the boat as if we didn't think of that one before. Only to be amazed at what happens next. Jesus comes to them with a simple meal and quiet ways and through unimpressive means, and their eyes are opened to a new world. Jesus is alive and present again here and meets them in the pronouncement of peace be with you and a simple invitation to sit down and have some breakfast. There's no I am the way, the truth, and the light, or great glowing lights, or special effects, a spectacle that leaves them all blind, or anything else. They simply come and have a meal and get invited into what's next. Get invited into where it goes next. And it's this invitation that is the tricky part. If we're thinking about the initiation of a leader, and especially when we think about Peter and how we now think about him through the eyes of tradition, St. Peter, guardian of the gates of heaven, the divine bouncer who says who gets in and who gets out, the fact that he starts here dripping in front of the Lord and being asked three times, do you even love me? Is quite the start. There's no interview here. There's no big thing about being called into this leadership, but there is a calling. And there is forgiveness. Because it echoes entirely what came before. In Jesus' threefold denial of Jesus, he's also given the threefold call from Jesus. If you go back and look at the Greek, this reference to the charcoal fire is the exact same phrasing as what came before around the fire in the courtyard where Peter says, I don't even know him. And there's little doubt that there is a resonance to come back. Like I told the kids, I think Peter was doing what we all did. I know what I did, and I know who I am, and I'm sorry, but I don't know what to do except to hide. Except to try to make it all better, and then Jesus comes into that and offers resurrection life and forgiveness to him even there. And what makes Peter, Peter, is that he was a person who was always saying yes. He keeps doing it again and again throughout the disciples, perhaps too much so. In his first invitation to follow, he says yes. in the outstretched hand of the Lord, inviting him to, sure, come out and take a stroll on the waves? He says, yes. In answering the question of, so who do you say that I am? He answers, yes, with a bold proclamation of truth. Time and again, he says, yes. And that's what makes him a disciple in the first place. And here he is doing it again. Doesn't know what he's signing up for or what it will do to him or where it will take him, though Jesus tells him that. But he says yes, and he finds the courage to say yes again, even though that he knows that he has failed his previous yeses in the biggest way possible. He denied the person who is now inviting him to say, feed my sheep. And he could only say yes in this moment because he found a way to accept the forgiveness for all that came before, which is no small thing. As difficult as finding forgiveness can be, accepting forgiveness for ourselves can be even harder. Think of that which you have done in your life that was less than perfect, or that which you wish would remain hidden if at all possible. How easy would it be for you to accept the invitation to stop hiding and tell the truth? Even if it was the invitation of the risen one. I'm reminded of my childhood regularly as I live with Luke and Anna's learning of how to exist in the world. I realize that what gets us into trouble most isn't so much the stuff that we do. It's what we do after. It's what we try to hide. It's what we try to explain away. It's what we try to justify. And all of the stuff that we put around having done that and then still being found out and still not having to find forgiveness, that is all a huge problem and a source of a lot of pain. It takes courage and grace to come out of that hiding and equivocation and obfuscation and to receive grace along the way. Perhaps at the end of it all, the primary difference between Peter the denier and Judas the betrayer is that Peter found a way on the other side of what he did to say yes and to receive forgiveness for what he had done, where Judas simply could not. Peter felt hurt that Jesus asked him three times, but the path of his journey with Jesus was full of this rhythm of call, response, and invitation. From that early fishing trip to the one reported in this passage, Jesus provides Peter with the option to take the journey following Jesus into the dawning of a new creation. He doesn't become perfect, although he matured over time, and he grew into the responsibility that he received. I suspect that he benefited more from the mistakes that he made than had he actually had a smoother path along the way. It allows him to follow on. It allowed him to keep saying yes in small steps time and again. And Peter's far from the only one. God is always using broken people to say yes time and again. The Bible is full of them in the reality. There's a number of examples I could give you, but I'll just give you one. Think of David. David, this man who was called to lead but remain profoundly broken and time and again strays from the narrow path that we would rather that he tread to get it right and to be solid in the first place. And he fails spectacularly all the time in ways that would frankly get him ostracized. But he's still described as the one who is after God's own heart, God's own way, and reaching and seeking that. David knows how to fight for his faith, but even more so, he knows how to say yes and offer the place in what God is doing then and there. And perhaps only after he's got an egg on his face or feeling as the world has abandoned him, he still finds a way to keep coming back to what is important and reaching out for God all the same. Do you love me? Jesus asks this question regularly. Some translations phrase it, "Do you love me more than these?" Meaning, more than those who are around, more than the stuff that you have, more than your life, more than your inclinations to hide from the past, more than the privilege to remain involved in and uncaring about the world around you. Jesus asks all these questions. Peter is asked it, and so are we. Time and again, each and every day. We are called time and again to place our love of Jesus foremost in our lives and in that calling to love and care the way that Jesus did. And in reality, we are faced with that question every day. Do you love me? And then, feed my sheep. We're always invited to say yes. We're invited to say yes to joining the invitation of doing the work of the kingdom here and now and to be the incarnation that we so long to see. The call to follow God rests on the invitation to love God with all our heart, soul, and mind. Our calling does not require us to achieve a level of perfection as a prerequisite. It just asks us to say yes to the love that we have in our hearts and to make that love real and to those around us. And the only thing that is required of us is our willingness to say yes and to continue to say yes to life with Jesus. And that can happen in all sorts of ways. We can say yes when we're full of confidence and bravado. And we can say yes when we have nagging reservations. We can say yes even when having doubts. And we can say yes even after we have emphatically shouted no however many times before. We can say yes without knowing fully where the way leads. We can say yes when we're full of fear and trembling, full of joy and misgiving or uncertainty, grief. We can say yes when we're inspecting the nets, and we can say yes when we're sure that we're near the end. Whatever it is, we can say yes to what is next, knowing with certainty that in that yes we will be met by the inviting grace of Christ who calls us time and again, no matter what came before, no matter what we carry along the way, no matter where we have denied or strayed or shaken. It's saying yes that makes all the difference. And saying yes that takes us down the road. For in saying yes, the door is opened and God is with us to change us and to forgive us and through us even change the world. This is our calling. We're invited to say yes. And may we each find our call and follow on with Christ, who bids us only to come and eat and be filled. Maybe so each and every day. Amen.